News, analysis, commentary, insight that you'll hear nowhere else in Central Virginia, and also points of view from guests that are unique to this program. We welcome back to The Shilling Show David Murata. David is the president of Murata Wealth Management, online at muratonmoney.com, and today is tax day. We're talking about avoiding excess taxation and reflections on tax day. David, welcome back to The Shilling Show. I have to ask you, I mean, you're not in the tax business, but you are peripherally. Is this as busy a time for you and your firm as it is for a lot of people around this time of year?
There are a lot of things that need to get done before taxes, and like any people, our clients sometimes postpone it until the end. I think on Monday we were finishing up funding Roth conversions that needed to, funding Roth IRAs that needed to get funded before April 15th. But with great complexity comes great opportunity, and so the opportunities of the tax code are worth a great percentage of your wealth if you can play them right. So if you're wealthy, they can be worth tens of thousands of dollars, and if you're not wealthy, they can be worth thousands of dollars. And so that's the thing that most people don't realize is a little bit of time spent on the tax code and in understanding the tax code will do two very important things. One, it will help you be much more tax efficient, and second, it will make you much more financially conservative.
I like the phrase tax efficient, but there are people that get very bent out of shape. And in fact, I think I saw somebody in the daily newspaper once writing about something you had said, but taking issue with people who somehow try to be tax efficient. They would call it gaming or manipulating the system. And I've never understood that. I mean, I don't think those people are advocating for a flat tax. These things exist. So what's wrong with taking advantage of it? In fact, it's probably wrong not to.
Yeah, it's certainly true that the tax code does not have a morality behind it. It simply has the law. And if people think that there's a morality behind the tax code, they're just mistaken. The tax code is trying to incentivize certain things. I say it's trying to as though it's a person. It does. It simply does incentivize certain things, and it punishes other things. And it is human nature that you will get more of whatever you incentivize, and you will get less of whatever you punish. And we have people who purposefully game the system to get benefits. They game the system to get extra funding. They game the system in all kinds of different ways. They game the system to get more solar companies.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow people are not against that, and yet they are against people just trying to organize their finances in order to have less. Just as one very simple example. Capital gains is probably a huge area that people should pay more attention to.
Mm-hmm.
And what most people do is they simply neglect any capital gains. So they're buying mutual funds on a regular basis, and they're building up capital gains. And you can build up over the course of your life hundreds of thousands of dollars of capital gains. That's the whole point of investing in the stock market. If you try to realize all of those capital gains in a single year, you will send yourself into the very highest tax brackets. In fact, the way to be in the top 1% of the way to be in the 1% is simply live in California and sell your house.
Oh, no.
That will immediately send you into the top 1%, and you're going to get taxed like the uber rich. If you take a little bit of capital gains each year, you can realize capital gains often at the 0% tax bracket up to about $75,000. And so a little bit of realizing of capital gains every single year at the 0% will save you from being taxed by the at the uber rich rates later on. Now, there's nothing different about your life. It's simply the system which punishes realizing too much capital gains in one year because now all of a sudden you're in the higher tax brackets.
But David, we look at all of this complexity. There was a report here on the amount of time that is spent, the amount of dollars, it's astronomical in compliance. And I think that's just what they can measure. I would imagine there's a lot more that goes on that they don't even know about. And so, you know, where are the voices of rationality calling for reform and simplicity in this monstrosity of a system?
Yeah, it is interesting to me that you were talking about compromise. The left is not willing to compromise on civil rights. but the left is willing is unwilling to give anything on economic rights, and I think most people don't realize that at least for fiscal conservatives, the financial arena is as important to them in issues of privacy and personal ability and freedom as it is for other matters are for the left. And so, you know, it may sound kind of strange, but for fiscal conservatives, you know, the boardroom is our bedroom, and we just wish the government would get out of it and let us run our businesses as we see fit, to be able to do the things economically that we want to do. And I think the greatest danger right now is over the past 6 or 7 years, we've moved so far to the left that the right is just getting both frustrated, depressed, discouraged, but also angry, thinking that there is no ability to have any kind of compromise from the left on issues that they think are of vital importance to the economy. And you know, my fear is in the growing divide is that we will get a dictator from the right because we're just to counter the dictator from the left, and someone will try to come in to try to solve issues, or the breakdown in civility will happen more and more as economics tends to fall apart, because economics has a lot more to do with the way we live and the freedom of economics than a lot of other matters.
I also think of the persecution and the weaponization of government and the IRS being used against conservative groups. We saw this story come out, and we still haven't gotten to the bottom of it. So, you know, looking at that, you say, no wonder that the you know, many on the right are demoralized or have gone underground, because look, you're a target.
Yeah, it's not hard to feel targeted by the IRS. Every letter they send you feels like a target.
Mm-hmm.
So, with whatever goes on there, you know, I think the That's where the best defense is a little bit of tax planning, especially for small business owners, because small business owners, we were looking at a small business owner from last year, we were projecting that they were going to have to pay about another $120,000 in taxes this for 2013.
Not because they made more money, but because of increased rates in Obamacare.
Simply because all of the profits were being heaped upon them. And as you heap those profits upon them, what happens is a form of trickle-down taxation. You know, I was coming in today, and it was drizzling and raining, and every one of those raindrops should remind people that taxes flow down just like wealth flows down, and they're being subject to higher taxes simply because business owners are being subject to higher taxes. So that means they have to take it out of their employee salaries, they have to hire less, they have to raise their prices. And what it does is, because the business owner has to pay taxes for all of us, even though all of us are being subject to it, it means the business owner needs to make a lot more money just to pay the taxes. And what that does is it drives up the wealth inequality, because we're setting aside some people to pay the taxes for all the businesses and all the taxes we're heaping upon the country, and we're setting aside other people as having the effect of the taxes in lower wages and higher prices, but they don't pay them. And so it looks like there's a greater income wealth inequality the more you have a more progressive tax system. And that's, you know, Obama's been talking about the wealth inequality in the country. He's actually driving it in the wrong direction by not allowing business owners to simply pay their fair share, meaning their equal share like they always should,
mm-hmm.
but rather trying to heap more upon them than they have to keep more of the profits simply to pay the higher taxes. And they're not any better off, but they look a lot better off in all the IRS statistics.
When I was at the post office, and we're talking with David Murata, when I was at the post office today and I went to drop off my, get stamped my payments into the government, the guy said, gosh, wouldn't it be interesting if they moved Election Day like right near tax day? I think things would change a little bit. I thought that was an astute observation.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah. Okay, so we come back on the other side with David Murata. When we get back, I want to talk about some surprise tax bills and new rates, things that you might have to look at as a small business owner that we just referenced. Also, we'll take your calls, questions, comments, challenges for David. We'd love to hear from you. The phone lines are open. You can get in line right now at 977-1070. Ellie stands by at 977-1070. And the Shilling Show with David Murata on Tax Day, right back. And you are with The Shilling Show. It's a Tax Day special. David Murata joins us, the president of Murata Wealth Management Online, and terrific, terrific insights on his website, muratahonmoney.com. Let's talk about some of the surprise tax bills. I know we had a little taste of that in talking about your specific client, but what's going to be happening to people who, individuals earning $400,000, I think it is, right, plus, or was that a small business?
Yeah, the top tax rate has gone up to 39.6% federally.
from? Do we know?
The top tax rate was at 35.
Okay, so.
So the top tax rate had another portion added to it. And the capital gains was added another 3.8% on top of that. And that's for anyone who's got any kind of capital gains over 200 if you're single or 250 if you're married. And what most people don't realize is, you know, these numbers sound really big. You know, all you have to do is to have a firm of 10 or 15 people, and all of a sudden you're talking about really big numbers. And those really big numbers flow under your personal tax form. And if you're trying to amass any kind of capital in order to buy a new restaurant or buy a new location or open a store or expand your product line or anything like that, you have to earn the money, pay the tax on it, and then after tax is free to be invested back into the firm. So, and when you invest it back into the firm, most of those are capital expenditures, like if you're buying a new location. And capital expenditures are amortized over, now I'm trying to remember all the obscure tax code, but is it 28 years or is it 29 and a half or something like that? So you'll get 1/28th of us back every single year, and it will lower your taxes going forward, but you have to pay the tax up front. And so those are the kinds of things that the tax code does to really hurt any kind of investment back into the business. And then if you have any kind of dividend-paying stocks, the dividend the tax on dividend-paying stocks in the top bracket has risen to about 74% if you count it all. Now, everyone will say, hold it, we don't have any tax in the United States that's 74%. But all you have to do is if a corporation makes $100, first the corporation has to pay tax, and the corporation pays tax at 39.6%. Then the person who's receiving it has to pay the individual dividend tax, which could be higher as well. And then there's the 3.8% on top of that. And then there's deduction phase outs on top of that. And then if you're in California, you know, there's another 12.3% on top of that. And what remains for the investor, you know, could be as low on $100, could be as low as $26.03.
So why would anybody even bother investing under those circumstances? Well, I mean, it seems like it's quite a disincentive.
That's part of the question, and it's one of the reasons why tax planning in our field is so important. Is if you have $1 million worth of investments and you're not doing any tax planning, you're losing out on a tremendous amount of benefit that you could have. And then since the federal government is deflating the value of the currency, inflating the price of everything, some of the rise in the stock market is just inflation, and it has no more buying power. And yet all of that inflation you get taxed on in terms of capital gains. And
the so, double whammy.
Yeah, it makes it even worse, because if things go up by 26% and you're paying 74% in taxes, you could have no gains, even though you have large paper gains. Because you have to send all the real gain to the government, and all you're left with is the inflation rate. So you're right. This is why tax planning is so important, is because inflation, if nothing else, is being used as a weapon to tax individuals who have any kind of assets.
And then they call the small business owners greedy. We've heard that term before. Well, they're just being greedy. They're just hoarding their money.
It's interesting. I heard a great comment, and they said, "Oh, I understand why the economy isn't going up and things aren't well. It's because somehow these small business owners have gotten more greedy, as though they weren't greedy in the past, but somehow as a result of these higher taxes, they've gotten more greedy." I mean, people have always had their self-interest, and so the self-interest hasn't changed. What really has changed is the government's overspending. And every time wealthy people pay more and more in taxes, it's not the middle class and the lower class that actually succeeds and benefits from that. It's simply the government class that benefits.
And you made a good point in one of the pieces that I read that you wrote on this subject, is that the government is the one that's greedy. That's the true greedy one, because they don't have any claim to this money. They've never earned it, and yet they're getting it. We could look at the property taxes. You know, the rate goes up, or the value goes up, and they should be lowering the rate to compensate, and yet they just keep everything that comes in, or most of it. That's real greed.
Yeah, it is amazing to me that as home prices go up, that isn't the natural rise in county taxes that they need to support county systems. The fact that they want to both let the property rates go up or the property values go up, and they also want to take a higher rate is really something is wrong there. And at least four out of our six county commissioners should be replaced by people who can manage the budget better.
Yeah, at least four. We're talking with David Morata. 977-1070 is the phone number. We welcome you, comments, questions, or challenges. Ellie stands by waiting for your call. 977-1070, the phone number. You can also send me an email if you can't get to a phone, robs@wina.com, and I'll be happy to take your question on the air. All right, let's talk about an interesting concept, gift tender offers to charities. Help us understand what that is, because that was all new to me.
Yeah, we had a case where one of the stocks that some of our clients owned was subject to a tender offer. Those of you who have investments, you probably receive these tender offer in the mail. You probably look at them. They require you to vote on something or to take some kind of action. You probably throw them away, which more often than not is the correct thing to do, because usually the tender offer is not in your best interest. In this case, it was one company buying out another company. The board of directors said, hey, that price is wonderful. It's in our shareholders' best interest, so we are going to tender the shares, meaning we're going to sell all your, you're going to be required to sell all of your shares. Well, for most people invested in this stock, it was a tremendous step up in cost basis, meaning the value that it was now being offered was much better than what they had purchased it for. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of our clients, they're in those top tax brackets, yeah, meaning that they're going to have to pay these exorbitant rates. And what we do is a lot of our clients have charitable intentions. They either have charities that they support directly, or they have a donor-advised fund that they give to that then gives to other people as well. And a lot of our clients are very generous that way. And in this case, all the clients who owned this particular piece of stock were also charitably inclined. So what you can do is you can take this stock and you can give this stock to one of your charities. Then when it's liquidated, you will not have to pay the capital gains, but you'll get the full write-off. So if anyone is out there who's listening, if you give any kind of, if you have any kind of charitable giving and you are giving cash, you are missing a tax savings opportunity, because all you have to do is to give appreciated stock and you will avoid the 15% capital gains rate or the 18.3 capital gains rate or the 23.8% capital gains rate, depending upon what tax bracket you're in. And so 23.8% is a tremendous tax savings, which either allows you to give more generously or else just avoid that taxes and you won't have to give as much.
David, let's talk about IRAs. Again, there are a couple types here that people can consider. You've got traditional and Roth IRAs. And I want to draw a distinction between the two, and I want to direct people in the right direction based on their situation. So how do we look at these two options?
Right. So a traditional IRA, if you put in the maximum this year is $5,500. If you're over 50, you can do an additional $1,000. So it's $6,500. So if you put the $6,500 in, you will get a tax deduction, and you won't have to pay tax on $6,500. The hope in this case is that there'll come some point in the future when you're in a lower tax bracket, and then you can take out this money to sort of fill the gap in the lower taxes. For anyone who is between retirement and age 70, at age 70 with an IRA, you have to start taking required minimum distributions because the IRS wants their tax to come out at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in between retirement and age 70, we call these the gap years. Sometimes you have no income. And these are times when you can take out tremendous amounts of money out of your IRA and still stay in the lower tax brackets so long as you've planned for it. It requires a little bit of planning for the gap years. So we like to get people around 50 who are going to prepare for the gap years and the tax savings, you know, between 65 and 70. We try to make sure they have enough capital taxable accounts to be able to live during those years and not have to take income.
So they take the money out during those gap years, and that's a beneficial time. You take it out and what, just put it in some other account and it's tax-free now?
Yeah, usually we try to do a Roth conversion at that point because we can take it out of where it's subject to taxes in the future and put it in someplace it will never be taxed again. So that's the hope if you're doing a traditional IRA. for most people, we recommend doing a Roth IRA on the premise that if you're young, you're in the lowest tax bracket you'll ever be in, and you will never have taxes as low as you're in now. And when you're old and you're conservative, because now you realize what it means, what all this taxation means, you're going to wish you would have funded your Roth IRA to the fullest extent when you were young, foolish, and liberal. So we recommend people fund their Roth IRA because it's the lowest tax bracket they'll ever be in. And what you're doing is you're putting taxable money where it will never be taxed again. So you still have to pay tax on it. But now that you've paid tax on it and it's sitting in a taxable account or a joint account, you're putting it someplace where you'll never have to pay tax on it again. And you can always get it what you put in to take it back out in an emergency, given enough time. I think it's a couple of years in the account, and then you can always get it back out. So for most people, a Roth IRA is correct. For people in the top tax brackets who are approaching retirement, you can take advantage of this gap years in order to put money into an IRA now, save the taxes, and then take it out later when you're in a lower tax bracket.
977-1070, the phone number. It's the Shilling Show. We've got one more segment left with David Morata on avoiding excess taxation, reflections on tax day. And we will continue this program with David and you right after this. Final segment of the Shilling Show for this hour. We'll have open phones coming up at the top of the hour. David Morata is with us, avoiding excess taxation and reflections on tax day. So let's talk about spending in retirement, because there are also little, I guess you'd call them weird tricks, as they say these days, that you should be thinking about in doing your spending planning.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, for every couple facing taking Social Security, there is a correct answer to Social Security, and most people lose about $150,000 of benefit because they file for Social Security at age 62 immediately. They just can't wait.
They jump right into it.
Yeah, they jump right in. However, for a couple especially, you have to look at the joint benefit, and both of you waiting until 70 is also the wrong idea. So it's interesting for couples as they approach Social Security that the most typical answer, again, it depends on both your incomes and ages, but the most typical answer is for the man to wait till age 70 and for the woman to start taking Social Security at age 66. So if anyone is approaching Social Security, especially before you take it at age 62, do stop and get a professional to look over and make a recommendation for when you should take it. And because of that, you have to wait till age 70 before you're even taking Social Security, and so you have to sort of figure out what to do between retirement and age 70, mm-hmm. and these are the gap years. You start taking Medicare at age 65, and Medicare is dependent upon your income. So especially if you start taking it during the gap years, your Medicare payments are very low, and anything you do in retirement that affects your adjusted gross income will affect your Medicare payments. So sometimes something looks right initially, and then in the next year you realize your Medicare payments have shot up and have gone through the roof, and so you have to be cognizant of that. Sometimes it's not good to be doing a lot of income additions in 1 year. And again, trying to spread it out to do a tiny little bit of maybe Roth conversion or a tiny little bit of of capital gains realizing is the right approach, because you're not going to send your Social Security up to be taxable all the way or your Medicare payments up all the way.
It sounds, David, like the government really benefits from the complexity of the system, because a lot of people are not taking advantage of any of the things that you referenced because they're simply not aware of them, and the government's just going cha-ching, cha-ching.
It does. Solzhenitsyn wrote A Day in the Life of Ivan Drazanovich to showcase the Soviet gulag. I would love to do the same thing, only it'd be a day in the life of someone and just show every single tax that they're paying indirectly throughout the day, because most people, the most common technique of government is to hide taxes in lots of places that the average citizen doesn't realize they're paying. And every time you go to buy anything at the store, or even that you just sit in your house and let the utilities run, you don't realize how many taxes that you're paying there. And I think as a result, we're much less conservative economically, because we don't realize all of these taxes are changing our behaviors.
What about records retention? I have this box of tax returns going way, way, way back. I can't stand it. I wish I could burn it or shred it. And yet I was told, you better hang on to that. Don't ever get rid of that.
Yeah, almost everything associated with your 1040 should be kept. The statute is, since you could file for an extension and you could have filed your taxes almost an entire year late, and because the IRS could go back and audit you 6 or 7 years afterwards, or 6 years afterwards, the rule is 7 years,
mm-hmm.
Except if the IRS decides that you've done anything fraudulent, and then there's no statute of limitations.
Okay.
So the difficulty with that is they could always just decide you've done something fraudulent. The IRS is not known for its good-natured customer service. And you can't cancel your subscription. So the best thing that you can do with the IRS is to keep your tax records pretty much forever. So I think we have our tax records going back to when we were first married in 1982. And it's funny to go back and look at them and realize how much tax is paid then, even on a salary that was very, very small, and how, mm-hmm. how the salary just can, you know, can, and the taxes have continued to go up since then.
David, the last words of advice for people here on Tax Day, what comes to mind?
I would say probably the most important thing you can do is to read over your tax form to try to figure out ways to do tax planning throughout the coming year. And the difficulty with it is that most people only look at the boxes that have values in them. But the most important ones that they're not taking advantage of them are the boxes that have no values in them. And so I would look at the blank boxes and try to figure out what is this and how can I take advantage of it? Because there's several that you can take advantage of if you would just fill out the boxes of realizing a little capital gains or taking a little bit of a deduction or starting a 401k if you're a small business owner or realizing what is available for miscellaneous deductions or home businesses or Schedule C or... Yeah, there's just a lot of complexity in the tax code, and taking a little bit of time to figure out one thing that you're going to do differently over the years will build up to where you're a tax expert and helping your friends on how to save taxes.
David Morata, thank you so much. It has been an enlightening hour. We appreciate you joining us here on The Shilling Show each and every month.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you can visit him online, MorataOnMoney.com. There's lots of these articles that we actually referenced today in this discussion are posted there for you, and they're all free. That's right. You can download them and look at them, read them online.